everybody. Welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Bobby.
I'm Jerry.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Chris.
All right, so we are back after a few weeks being gone. We've had some just every technical issue you could have.
Just about.
We've had in the past few weeks. So we've had to change programs. We've had to change. It's been a whole thing. But we are back and hopefully better than ever. So this week we wanted to do, we've been talking about this for a while, but we're going to do a nice, big, long, extra cast on breaking into modern. Now is probably the best time to start looking at modern decks you like, looking at what you want to play in modern, and start picking up pieces because we're out of modern season. Prices should come down a little bit for a little while. Yeah, I mean, it's just a good time as far as buying, looking. There's tons of lists to look at, all kinds of stuff. So let's start off with talking about transitioning from standard to modern. What were your guys' like first impressions when you played modern compared to standard?
It was overwhelming. But not in a bad way, though. It was a completely different kind of magic than what you're used to when you're playing standard. And it's not really I went from playing standard to playing modern. It's I picked up modern as well. It's not like you have to choose one or the other. And it helped me overall become a better player in standard, too, because you start thinking a lot more lines and more critical on the place that normally you're kind of iffy on, if you will.
Yeah.
But now you have more confidence going into it just because you have that experience from everything else.
Yeah, what about you guys? First thoughts on modern, you know?
First thoughts. I've been playing Magic long enough to where I remember the original incarnation of the modern format.
Yeah.
And it was pure speed of the format. We were dying turns 2 and turns 3 pretty consistently. And since then, it's dropped down to turns 3 and 4. So that initial speed is still there. These are sometimes quicker games, but they can sometimes drag into long games because of fear of just, I'm dead on the crackback.
Yeah. What about you, Chris?
I didn't start till about 2013, 2014 playing modern. I'd probably say 2013, and I was a little overwhelmed. I mean, being used to just coming in like mono black devotion, kill things, make a bunch of pack rats, win, to seeing all these interactions with the different decks, the value of the cards in that format. Yeah. The triggers on the stack, doing all kinds of craziness, just seeing the game of Magic, maybe not broken, but the rules definitely bent quite a bit.
Yeah, that's definitely fair to say. So I think there's a common theme here of being overwhelmed, and I mean, that's exactly what we're trying to help you with here today, because it's weird, because at first you think of it as, like, it's still Magic, right? But then once you start playing Modern, I mean, it's like a completely different game in a lot of senses. Like Jerry said, the format is a lot faster than Standard. A lot of the decks are, they can kill you out of nowhere with combos. I mean, it's just, it's a crazy format. You're usually on guard like the entire time in every match because most decks can pull out the win from anywhere. But yeah, so let's hit some of these key points. I mean, the biggest one is, it's a faster format. You'll hear Modern described as a turn 4 format, and the reason is because a lot of decks can kill you on turn 4. Splinter Twin, I mean, the list goes on and on and on. So what that means is that every little interaction means a lot more. In Standard, I feel like your typical turn 1 is play a land, go, play a land, go. You get started turn 2, turn 3, but even then it's kind of a slower start, whereas the whole game can really happen in turns 2 to 3 in Modern if you're playing certain decks. Splinter Twin's kind of a good example of that on a deck that at the end of your third turn, they play a card, and then on their fourth turn, they play Splinter Twin and win. So it's a lot more punishing for mistakes. I mean, have you guys noticed that? I'm sure you have, right? Like,
absolutely. You never want to tap out on turn 3.
Oh, yeah.
If you see a blue and 2 red mana up, you go and look and you're like, "Uh-oh. Can't be doing this.
Something's up." Yeah. Go ahead, Rob.
A big thing too with it was just getting used to all the cards.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a deep format.
Yeah. But the faster format though, it's not guaranteed you're going to lose turn 3. Like, don't be turned off from modern at all. It's like, oh, I don't want to die turn 3. The decks can work that quick, yes. But the other decks that are out there, the reason they're the top decks is because they're able to counter that.
Yeah, that's a great point. Because I know I heard it a lot going into it, and I really expected literally to play 4 turns every game and that would be it. But that's not always the case. It's not often the case. It's still a much faster format. But yeah, if you have a deck that can combat what they're trying to do, it can drag out for 6, 7, 8, even upwards of 10 turns for games. Because There's this mind game that starts where do they have it? Are they bluffing it? I mean, there's lots of times where Twin will play a Deceiver into nothing. They don't have the combo. They're just trying to get you to waste counter spells, things like that. So reading your opponent and just playing in general, everything gets heightened because there's so much on the line each turn instead of Standard where you rarely feel comfortable past the turn and then lose in Standard. You know what I mean? But in Modern, like, that happens all the time. Another big one that Chris hit on was the harder interactions. Modern is a format where you get to see the rules of rules of Magic bent to their extremes. In many cases, they're broken. They've had some bannings in the past where things were just way too powerful. What weird interactions did you guys come across that you didn't expect?
Go ahead, Chris.
I remember the first time playing for it was a Modern PTQ, and that was the first time I ever saw Ad Nauseam played. And I really just thought that was cheating because, you know, they have the Angel's Grace or the Phyrexian on life, and they're like, oh, well, I'm just going to flip my deck over and kill you with Lightning Storm or something like that. And you're like, oh, so I just lose then. Like,
why is this allowed?
Yeah, I just can't beat you. Is that how this went? And that's the one that sticks is seeing Ad Nauseam played and like, there is no way this is fair.
Yeah. What about you guys?
Mine would have to be the infect tokens. That was one of the most difficult things for me to get used to at first. And then I ended up enjoying it a lot. I picked it up, but I started off with Bloom Titan, which also has its own difficult interactions.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because you have so many things then that go on the stack in a short period of time. And if you mess up that stack once, Jerry's going to talk about it later, you just misplayed, and that misplay is going to cost you your game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even Bloom Titan's one where, even if you're doing the plan decently, you're cheating out your Primeval Titan, like, you can still mismanage your mana and not be able to pump them as much. You may not get the right lands that pump. I mean, so even when you feel like you're doing it right, you may still be leaving, you know, damage on the table.
Exactly.
The one broken interaction, or rather harder interaction that really threw me through a loop was the original Blazing Shoal discarding your Progenitus to give your infect creature +10/+10 on turn two. That was before the banning took place. That was a pretty busted interaction that we all picked up on rather quickly.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think one of my favorite was with the card Gifts Ungiven, where the original text on it, you look for four cards with unique names, and you show them to your opponent. They choose two to put in your graveyard, two to go to your hand. Well, because of Fail to Find, when you're looking at a hidden zone, you can Fail to Find. So you can look for just two cards, forcing them both to the graveyard. I mean, we'll get more into that combo later, but it's just a weird one where when you read the card, you don't even pick up that you can do that. But because of the rules of the game, because of the Fail to Find rule, you can do some broken things with that as well. But yeah, I mean, the interactions, like, you see a lot more players have to learn about the phases a lot better, when they have priority. Like, I think at the end of your draw step, you usually don't see much happening there in Standard, but with Vendilion Quick, Click, and things like that in Modern, you see a lot more of that. There's just, the turn structure becomes a lot more important, and everything, like, making positive that you and your opponent both know which phase you're doing things in, you're playing certain cards in, becomes a lot more meaningful. I mean, it can win you or lose you the game, where in Standard there's a lot more wiggle room. I mean, the other thing is, like, if you don't understand the interaction that your opponent's deck is trying to abuse, you may be leaving yourself completely dead in the water to things. I mean, I think that's probably one of the most intimidating things with Modern is that if you don't know what your opponent's trying to do, you're probably not going to stop them. Like, you have to get pretty lucky to stop a combo you're unaware of. So there's a lot of learning that goes into getting to Modern, but I mean, the best way to do that is just get in there and lose a bunch and figure out what's going on. Make your opponent show you the whole combo and explain the interactions, because, I mean, honestly, I think that there's a lot of Modern players that are newer that are using combos that they themselves couldn't even really explain exactly why it works. Scapeshift, I think, is a good example where you're bringing in Valakut and Mountains at the same time. So your initial thought would always be that wouldn't Valakut need to already be on the field before the Mountains for it to see the Mountains entering, because they're all entering simultaneously. And that was one that I had to go over a few times when I first started playing that deck to make sure I knew 100% why this was working this way. So, I mean, that's be prepared for a lot of that coming into Modern. Rob touched on this a second ago, but another huge one is the card pool. The card pool is enormous. I know that I've caught people with some weird cards they hadn't seen before. I'm sure you've all been sitting across from players that bust out something that's not usually in the list that completely throws you off. You got any good examples of this? Thoughts on this?
Mine was at a modern Premier IQ. Alex and I were both running the initial rendition of Goryeo's Vengeance, and we had Gitu and Campman in there, a mainland. And we had the older one. I can't remember what set it's from. Jerry, I see you smiling over there. But it was reprinted in 10th edition. But when we played the card, it had the older set, the set that was not legal in modern. And immediately the questions start being asked, hey, is that legal? Yep. Yes, it was reprinted here.
Judge, is this legal?
Yep. Right. So the guy did the right thing, though. He called a judge. The judge came over, looked it up, and said, yes, here it is. Reprinted in 10th. He has an order text of it.
Yep. I mean, it happens all the time where you see these cards from like out of nowhere. And even when you're building your own deck, someone will suggest a card that you had no idea even existed. I mean, the card pool is just so vast that if you're a newer player, you have to start with the basics. You have to learn the cards that see the most play first. But, you know, in the first 6 months of playing Modern, you're probably going to get caught off guard with something you had never even heard of. It just kind of comes with the territory. Like, what are you going to do there? So don't feel, despite the large card pool, there's not a lot of cards that see play. I mean, there are, especially compared to Standard, there are more, but it's still probably what, like 10, 20% of the card pool.
I would like to actually hit up on a point. One of the writers, Anthony Lowry from Star City Games, put together a very fantastic article called The Power 9 of Modern, where he shows a list of 9 of the most powerful cards in Modern, and he hits up on everything except for the Inquisition of Kozilek, where you have the ability to look at your opponent's hand, pull a card out of it that costs 3 or less, put it in the graveyard. There, that list right there really sums up, like, these are the cards you should be looking at into playing Modern. The more of these you have in your deck, the better your deck tends to look.
Yeah. So, I mean, I made a note here. We'll throw that link into the chat so they can check that out. There's a lot of good Modern resources. But, yeah, I mean, you start with the big ones of the format. You start with looking at top 8 deck lists. We're going to talk about some decks here a little bit. And just focusing on the main points at first, because that's the only way you're going to learn it all. And then you'll slowly pick up the extra cards as time goes. I mean, Jerry will constantly tell me that he's got some new idea for his deck. Hey, this card, have you ever heard of it? Nope. Tell me what it does. Like, just leave your ego at the door and don't be afraid to admit you have no idea what these cards are. Because, you know, I've been playing for quite a few years now, but it's still, even though there's still tons of cards out there in Modern that I've just never even seen, to be completely honest. And a lot of them I'm never going to see, but one of them's going to lose me a win and in, or it's going to lose me an early round at a big tournament. I'm going to be mad about it all day, but it happens. You know, be prepared, understand the deck, and that usually will get you good enough. The biggest one, too, for me that I thought was interesting coming into Modern was the constant threat of combos. Like, when you play against, and I know that we've had combo decks recently in Standard, but I don't even think they compare to what you see in Modern. I mean, they're a lot more, they're weaker, they're a lot more work to get them to work. I mean, they're not as obvious and as quick as combos in Modern. So when I think Modern combos, I think Twin is sort of the best example, because Twin is a combo, it's a 2-card combo. It's one card with flash that's played at the end of your opponent's turn usually, and then on your turn you play Splinter Twin on it. So this is what it does to the game is every single turn, once they have 3 lands down, you're thinking about this combo. You have to respect this combo. You have to have an answer and hold it up to the combo. But then you also have to know when to kind of call their bluff and just go for what you're trying to do despite the threat of the combo. And I think that that's one of the interesting things in Modern that you don't have in Standard, where you can't really afford to ignore your opponent's deck unless if you're playing something super fast. And even then, I'm sure, Chris, playing Burn, you've had moments where you don't have enough to kill them, so you've got to leave up some Burn for their Deceiver or for their, you know, whatever their twin target's going to be. So it's this weird place where, like, even when you're an aggressive deck, you still sometimes have to hold that answer up if you have it, or just try to go for it if you don't. But there's a lot of decks that present this. I mean, Scape Shift. What about some of the other? I'm trying to think of, like, faster combo decks.
Faster combo decks that exist out there? There's a lot.
Grizzle Shoal, yeah, is a good one.
Infect,
if you want to
call it a combo.
Yeah. Storm. Yeah, no, Wood Storm. So, I mean, all these decks are ones that as soon as they get to turn 2 or turn 3, you have to put it on the radar and you have to respect the combo for the rest of the game, essentially. You need to have some type of silver bullet or something to disrupt it. And, I mean, I think for people just coming into Modern, they hate this at first. But it really, it makes the game so much more intense. I mean, they can turn at any minute. And it just, I mean, I think it's one of my favorite parts about it now.
We talk about tempo swings a lot, and Modern's a place you can go and see huge tempo swings. Like, I am on top, and I'm losing.
Yeah, I'm completely ahead and done.
Yeah, just like, and I play this, and they say, well, trigger on the stack, or in response, and you're like, oh, well, I just lose.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of that, and especially a lot of it when you first start, but you'll get over it after a while, and I think everyone comes to enjoy it eventually about the format.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just the ubiquity of the Splinter Twin combo really does shape the format. You may not even be running the deck at all, but you could completely be bluffing the combination of cards in your hand. Your opponent's not going to do anything until they feel safe or until they have the ability to cast a spell that promotes their gameplay, making it go forward, and keeping the answer up at the same time.
Yep. Yeah, it puts decks in a hard place because it really taxes your resources because, yeah, you can't afford to just sit there all day because eventually they are going to have the combo and they may have redundancy to get around whatever your answer is. And it's a shame Alex isn't with us this week. He's out at an open. Where's he at? Philly?
Yeah, he'd be at Star City Games Philly.
Yeah, so he's in Philly right now for an open, but he's probably the king of the Splinter Twin bluff. Like, playing against that guy is a nightmare because Splinter Twin is also a really good tempo deck, so they're flashing in Snapcasters, they're bolting you in the face, and they're slowly beating you down while you're... So you have to deal with that and also the threat of the combo. And I mean, a lot of Splinter Twin players will board out the combo for game two or three, or they'll shave down numbers on the combo, so they're probably not ever going to hit it, but you still just always kind of have to respect it. So getting used to playing against that, like, it's stressful at first. I mean, that deck is one where when you play against it, it feels like it always has the answer. It always has the combo. It always draws the piece it needs. I mean, it just feels like such a great deck when you first... And it is, but...
Yeah, it's a collection of good cards. Yeah, absolutely. That does something. Like, even if you don't get one of the... Even if you don't get the combo pieces, the deck still does something.
Yeah. Yeah, so, like, it's one that everybody should definitely proxy up and play from their side, though, to see kind of the weaknesses in it, because it definitely doesn't always have the answer. It doesn't always have the combo. Like, it just feels that way looking at it from the other side of the table. But I think that that's probably one of the best decks to look at for just combo threat. So then one of the biggest things, too, in Modern, and some people love this about Modern. I don't really see many people that hate it about Modern, but there's just tons of decks. I mean, you definitely have tier one decks, and there's some debate about that. I'd say there's, what, maybe five-ish in that range. We'll get into specific decks in a little bit, but there's a big field of, like, tier one and a half, tier two decks that still top eight GPs. They win GPs. They top eight opens. I mean, they're still very viable. Good pilots with these decks go very far, have a lot of success with them. Mediocre pilots have success with them on certain days of the week. You know, it happens, so... It opens up your choices, but it also opens up to what you have to be prepared against.
Modern is such a large format that you're just not going to be prepared to fight against everything.
Yeah.
So you need, as much as you can be prepared for it, sometimes the obnoxious one of fairy deck in the entire room is just going to hit you. So I like to think of it as there is no bad Modern deck. There's only a bad time to play a deck. Yeah, so you can really get away with that.
Well, and there's so many deck choices. You can find a, and I use this term, competitive deck that is in your play style.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Now, it for that weekend or that day, it might not be the number one deck, but it's in your play style. You're going to have fun. You should have fun, but you may still lose. But you can find, if combo's your thing, there's so many choices. If aggro's your thing... There's still, what, Dallas just had a red-green hyper aggro deck win?
Yep, the red-green deck I'd been working on. Someone did it.
Cat's out of the bag.
Someone did it.
2013, Worlds was taken by a Jeskai control deck, I think.
Yeah, it sounds right.
Yep.
And so, I mean, Bloom Titan, where, yeah, it's combo-ish, but it's math-intensive. Like, you still have to look at interactions. You know, there is something out there in Modern that you just enjoy.
There is something for everyone.
Your play style, and you can still compete. You still have the potential to top eight with it, or to go to a local event and just wipe the room with it.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite thing about it is, like, for Standard, there are decks that I've sleeved up and tried out that I just did not like. I've never had that experience in Modern, even ones that are way out of my playstyle. Like, I mean, I was just talking to the guys not that long ago about how I'm looking at putting Fish together, Merfolk together to try every now and then, and that's way out of character for me, but, like, it just, all the decks are fun. Like, they all have really cool interactions. They're all built really well. They're all good 75, so, I mean.
Mm-hmm. And you don't feel like you're playing bad Magic cards either. Standard, no, never. Standard, you're sometimes limited to playing that 4-mana removal spell at sorcery speed. You have to do that.
Yeah.
In Modern, no deck in Modern plays bad cards. No. Every card is good in its own way, has yep. seen play as a four of in its Standard archetype to some extent.
It's in that deck for a reason, and when you get to see it fully work, you understand that's why I put that card in there.
Yeah, I mean, I think a good way to summarize Modern in that regard would be that it really is. I mean, it's a format that's built on the all-stars of all previous Standard decks, basically.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, when rotation comes, the bad cards that only saw play because of situations or because you just needed it go to the wayside, and all the good cards stick around and find their way to Modern deck. I mean, that really is what it comes down to. So, I mean, yeah, you've got lists and lists of good competitive decks. We're going to go through a bunch of them for you here in a little bit. But at the end of the day, like, the sky's the limit. I mean, there's probably even some what you would call, like, tier 3 Modern decks that perform pretty well. I mean, there's anything for you out there, whatever you want. I constantly have to stop myself from ordering cards for all kinds of decks because there's just, like, there's so many good options. I find myself thinking, like, I want to try that a little bit. I want to try that a little bit. So don't feel discouraged getting into it because I think it's well worth it.
Yeah. And you should probably know going in, we're going to talk about a lot. We talk about fair decks. Decks that are, you know, maybe one for one removal, slowly grind you out. If you build that deck first, just understanding the Modern format, you're probably going to lose a lot at first. Because it's you're playing fair and you have the combo decks out there, they're not playing fair. They're bending the rules, you know. They're almost snapping it.
Yeah.
So just get better and better. Like, Jerry played Abzan for a long time, and he played it very well. But now he's trying new stuff. He wants to break the format a little bit. Because enough people, while he was playing fair, probably broke the format on him.
Hashtag near-death experience.
Yeah. So now yeah. he's just tired. So just know that if you play these fair decks, it's going to be a little bit rougher. You're going to play a little longer. But I will say it'll probably make you a better player because you're not playing Tetris anymore. You're having to interact.
Yeah, I mean, like, I got into the format playing a control deck, and that was probably the worst idea I could have had. But I knew that going into it, but because, like, stopping decks when you're not even sure what they're trying to do exactly is a tall order. There's lots of times where I would, you know, thought seize in and see a hand and just, like, I don't know what this guy's going for, but it probably kills me real quick. So got figured out quick, I suppose. And I mean, yeah, I picked up tons of losses at little local tournaments, but you learn a lot and you learn it real quick. Yeah. But like we said, we've given you a pretty good taste here. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a whole bunch of decks. I mean, we're going to give you, like, the elevator speech, the 10-second rundown on each of these to kind of give you a feel for what your options are. We're also going to be talking about how you specifically can choose a deck and how you can get reps in with it to feel better with it. And then also what probably a lot of people are really concerned about, sort of the financial aspect, the how to get into Modern, how to do it for the cheapest, how to do it the best way. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in just a minute. All right, everybody, welcome back. So for this segment, what we're going to do is we're just going to go through, I mean, there are tons of decks in Modern. So we got a little over 20 of them here listed for you. And we're just going to go through and give you, like, the elevator pitch, why you should play this deck, what type of player would like this deck, things like that. And then we're hoping this will just kind of spark your interest so you can go and check out the deck.
Meat and potatoes, leave the broccoli on the plate.
Exactly. There you go. Yeah. It's all business during this segment. So let's kick it off with, we'll combine Jund and Abzan.
I'll even go a step further into just calling it Green Black X midrange, yeah, as these decks all have turn one hand disruption is ideal, followed by a turn two or turn three threat in the form of Tarmogoyf or Liliana of the Veil. And they sit behind these threats, punching through removal spells to keep their Goyfs, keep their tempo continually going on through. the big difference between these two decks is which do you prefer? Culligan's Command, the 2-for-1 spell that came out of Dragons of Tarkir, or Lingering Souls, where you could jam a bunch of tokens in their face.
Yep, so I mean, you're looking for card advantage, all your threats are potent, you're ripping apart their game plan, and just grinding them out. Real grindy deck, has answers for mostly everything. I mean,
yep.
It's kind of the peacekeeper of the format, right? I mean,
the upside of this deck, it has no real bad matchups. The downside is, its only real superlative matchup is against the twin decks.
Yep. So there you go. So if you want the fair middle ground deck, like, that's the way to go. It's the most mid-range deck of the format, right? I mean,
yes.
So, all right. So now we'll talk about Splinter Twin. We've mentioned this one a few times. And Splinter Twin is a tempo-ish, control-ish deck with a built-in combo. So if you are the type who likes to dig, kind of sculpt your hand, disrupt your opponent a little bit, and then win and call it a day, this is definitely the deck for you. Grixis is the color of choice now with red, black, blue, but there's also a lot of blue-red, and I've seen more and more of that popping back up with just the blue-red lists. But really, I mean, you're just looking at a tempo game plan. You're looking at a lot of super effective cards, a lot of good card selection, counter spells, and then a combo to finish it off. They also can bolt and snap caster people to death just fine. So, I mean, it's another one of the tier one decks of the format. Very expensive, very effective, very potent. Pretty solid deck. All right, Jerry, you want to talk something about Bloom Titan?
Yes, Bloom Titan is a deck that kind of takes cards out from set A, cards in set B, and oh my, look, we got what's going on here. So the first card I'm going to talk about is Amulet of Vigor, 1-mana artifact that says whenever a permanent enters the battlefield tapped, it comes into the battlefield untapped instead. So what you do is with a turn 1 amulet, you will play a card known as Summer Bloom. You get to play 3 additional lands this turn for a colorless and a green at sorcery speed. In this case, you get to play all the Ravnica Karu lands. These are lands that produce 2 mana, would normally enter the battlefield tapped, but they'll enter the battlefield untapped because of the amulet, and their own triggered ability requires them to return a land to your hand, so it'll return itself, so you generate 2 mana, play it again, generate 2 more mana, play it again as your third land to generate a total of 6 mana, allowing you to play either a Primeval Titan out of your hand or Hive Mind out of your hand. Primeval Titan being the 6/6 for 6 with Trample, says whenever it enters the battlefield, you find 2 lands and put them onto the battlefield tapped. Amulet of Vigor brings them out untapped. So at this point, you can chain together any combination of lands. The popular one is Boros Garrison, Karu Land, the red-white one, and a Slayer's Stronghold, using the red-white made by the Karu Land into the Slayer's Stronghold to give your Primeval Titan 2/0 haste and vigilance. So it attacks as an 8/6, and you get to trigger it again, getting more lands. And with Hive Mind, anytime any player casts an instant or sorcery, each player must copy that. So you'll play the series of packed spells from Future Sight that say, whenever you cast a spell, pay X mana at the beginning of your upkeep, or you lose the game. So you'll force your opponents to lose games because they just can't pay for the packs.
Yep, so I mean, what type of player would like this deck?
Anyone who likes glass cannon combos, likes winning real quickly, and the ability to just blow people's minds away.
Yep. It has a turn. Does it have a turn one kill? Or is it just
it can build into a turn one kill if you dedicate to Simeon Spirit Guide plan.
But turn two is, it's not super frequent, but it happens.
Turn two can happen. Turn three is when it usually happens.
Yep. So, I mean, this is a real powerful combo deck. It's a lot of weird interactions, lots of rules that you have to be very cautious of, but it's also a very good, like, solitaire deck. You really don't care what your opponent's doing. You can get a lot of reps in by yourself, just running through the motions, lots of videos and things, but nope, solid deck. All right, so we'll talk a little bit about Merfolk now. Merfolk is it's a tribal deck based around merfolk creatures. You have a few lords in there. Whenever you say lords, you're referring to a creature that gives all creatures of that type +1/+1. And then you also, really the biggest card in it is Aether Vial. So Aether Vial is a 1-drop. During your upkeep, you may choose to put a counter on Aether Vial. It has an ability where you can tap it and put a card from your hand into play that its converted mana cost equals the number of counters on Aether Vial. The key thing here is that you're putting it directly into play. You're not casting it, so it can't be countered. It gets around, you know, counter magic, all of that. And it's a deck that you're running Spreading Seas to turn their cards into islands. Sometimes you can get them off mana that way. It also lets you attack through with Island Walk. A few of them have Island Walk, and some of the lords give them all Island Walk. I mean, so you're looking at an aggro deck that it functions more like a tempo deck in a way.
It cheats on the mana Excel with Aether Vial being what it is, because at turn three, if you went on a turn one Aether Vial, you can drop a three drop and a two drop on turn three.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a really good aggro deck that sort of wins out of nowhere, because they go from having one Merfolk into play to all of a sudden they have two, three, four Merfolk in play, maybe a Mutavolt too that are activating, and suddenly they're swinging for 14, 16, 18 damage. It's a pretty straightforward deck to play. It's got a lot of sideboard options to deal with other decks. In the main deck, it's kind of just doing its own thing, but it does have some interactions with some of the different Merfolk abilities. But it's a pretty accessible deck. It's a pretty good deck to learn on, but it's not always the best. It is coming into favor a lot more, though. It's been popping up more and more in top eights. I mentioned earlier that I am interested in playing it. But all right, Chris, what about Burn?
Burn is just it's simple, straightforward. I'm going to try and kill you as fast as I can with whatever cards I consider the best Burn cards of the format. So your Lightning Bolts, your Boros Charms. And not necessarily all Burn. Like I said, I'm on the Jund plan right now, so I use Bump in the Nights too, because I try and get around the Spell Skied absorbing some of my Burn, so just target opponent loses life, stuff like that. But it's just value life loss spells, 1 to 2 if possible, as fast as you can. It doesn't really like to mess around. It doesn't want to put them at your creatures. It wants to get you from 20 to 0 and by turn 4 if possible, if not sooner. Pretty straightforward.
What are your creatures? You're running Goblin Guides.
Goblin Guides, Monastery Swift Spear. Some people run Grim Lavamancer.
And Eidolon of the Great Revel.
Eidolon of the Great Revel is the big card that we got. So anything cast 3 CMC or less, deal 2 damage. So it just... The creatures that you do play are almost like additional burn spells that you hope live more than a turn, and it just adds up to value.
Yeah, they're hasters. They're getting out of the game, hitting you quick. Eidolon punishes you for playing removal. I mean, yeah, so it really is just a burn them out as fast as you can deck. Sideboard's pretty good. You got some options in there, too. It's another pretty good intro deck, definitely, and I mean, it puts up results. All right, so we'll talk about Affinity. Affinity, is it fair to say it's the fastest aggro deck in the format?
Yes, that's a pretty fair assumption. The name, however, is not really fair anymore. As for Affinity for Artifacts was the ability that originally created this deck, and there are currently no cards in any list with Affinity for Artifacts.
That's pretty hilarious. But yeah, so it's an artifact aggro deck. You're usually dumping your hand pretty fast. Cranial Plating is a big one.
Plating is the key card to the list, as to where it gives the equipped creature +1/+0 for each artifact you have on the battlefield.
Yep. So
The one that also it has attach and not equip, so they can move
at
it around?
Black, black.
You can attach it at instant speed.
Yeah, and it's instant speed too, so if they're going to kill something, they can just move
it
around.
You can jump around removal, things like that. Yeah, and it's the same kind of thing where it's just a lot of moving counters around. Some of the cards come with counters into play. Some of them, when they die, you distribute counters. I mean, you can look at the list and kind of see, get a feel for how it works, but
it's a bunch of what do you call them again? Static and triggered abilities that came from all the artifact sets that exist in Modern, particularly Modular and Metalcraft.
Yeah, and then you're running like Mox Opals to accelerate a little bit. I mean, usually, like I said, you're getting your hand out, you're swinging in, you're doing a lot of damage turn 2, turn 3. I mean, it's a pretty all-in deck. Usually if people can destroy all your artifacts, you're in a really bad spot. You're trying to just beat them before that happens. I think it's probably has one of the best game ones in the format, and then it gets a lot softer games 2 and 3 to hate because it doesn't have a lot of ways to deal with mass artifact removal. But it's a strong, powerful deck. I mean, I know I've played it quite a few times, and usually, I mean, you're just on the edge of your seat the whole time because it can go off immediately.
In comparison to a lot of decks in the format, it is also one of the more affordable ones.
Yeah, it's not too bad. You got a few pieces, but more on that later. But yeah, so if you just want a fast, it's a little less straightforward than Burn, I guess you would say. You've got a little bit more play, a little bit more workaround, but when it trips, it falls.
Dump hand, turn sideways.
Yep. All right, so next we're coming up on Infect. Rob, what you got?
So for Infect, what you're looking at is the cheapest Infect creatures that existed in the format when they came out back, what was that, Scars of Meriden? That was?
Scars of Meriden.
Back in Scars. And so you have your one drop at Glistener Elf. You're also utilizing the land Ink Moth Nexus. And then you have an unblockable with Blighted Agent. And those are your Infect creatures. That's it. 12 of them.
What does Infect do?
Infect. Okay, yeah. Yeah, let's go into Infect. So the ability Infect, whenever a creature with Infect deals damage, instead of dealing combat damage to a player, it deals damage in the form of poison tokens. If a player at any moment has 10 poison tokens, he's dead. He loses the game. For creatures, it deals damage in the form of -1/-1 counters. And those counters stay. So then the rest of your list is pump spells. You got the cheapest, best pump spells. Mainly you're going for the 1-drop +4/+4 and Groundswell and Mind of Old Croza. You have the Phyrexian Green. What that means is you can either pay 2 life or tap 1 green and target creature gets +2/+2 until end of turn. And then it also runs a couple Become Immense. It depends on how many you want to throw in there. Then you have protection spells in the form of Vines of Vastwood and Apostle's Blessing, which can give your creature protection from a color until the end of turn, and potentially pump it in the form of Vines of Vastwood, which could give it +4/+4.
So what made you pick this deck as opposed to other aggro decks?
So compared to all the other aggro decks, this one drew me in on the sole fact that I only have to go to 10. And this is one of the ways that Modern bends the rules.
It's a solid way to go.
Right. Instead of now going up to 20, I can go to 10. One big thing, too, that I've changed a little bit is I've been mainboarding Rancor to give my creatures Trample, and at States it did very well. Trample for Infect is, I would almost say, a must, because you're going to get the small things down there. You're going to get an early Tarmogoyf on the field, or you're going to get some 1-1 tokens that you're going to have to power through. And if you don't have that, then you're either sitting and keeping all of your pumps in hand because you don't want to waste them, and then you're probably going to lose, or you're going to blow them, and then you have nothing else, and you're going to lose.
Yeah, so this is a good deck to check out. I mean, it's another aggro option, very fast deck. There's tons of videos of Tom Ross piloting this deck. It's probably his namesake, right, at this point. It's the most popular deck, and there's lots of good ways to check it out and see how this gameplay works, but it is. I mean, it's a super fast, explosive deck. You're putting your opponents in a position where they have to deal with that creature, or that's it. What's the man land that it runs?
Ink Moth Nexus is the man land. For one colorless, it becomes a 1/1 flying artifact creature with Infect.
What about that legendary land it runs?
Pendlehaven?
Yeah.
Yeah, some decks do run a 1 of Pendlehaven in it, and what that one does is you tap it to give a 1/1 creature you control +1/+2 until end of turn. And that could really help out if there's like a Pyroclasm on the board. Then you can tap that in response and make your Glistener Elf a 2/3, and then it won't die.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of, between that and then the Exalted Creature, there's just a lot of, like, free pumps kind of built in, plus your pumps. I mean, it does damage fast. What's the earliest turn you can kill with on that?
Turn 2.
Turn 2, yep. So there you go, folks. But yeah, so, I mean, that's just another great option if you're looking for an aggro deck. All right, so next on the list, we're talking about Kiki Cord. I'm so sad we don't have Alex to talk about this deck with us.
Well, the Kiki Cord list, simply putting it, is a deck of as many 1/2 creatures as you can put in with Mana Dorks and Court of Calling. Using Court of Calling is 3 green and X, and you can also Convoke for it. And you search your library for any creature with converted mana cost X or less and put it onto the battlefield.
Yep, so the main combo that it runs is Restoration Angel and
Kiki Jiki Mirror Breaker.
Yep, so what's the combo here? Kiki, you copy the angel. When the new angel comes into play,
untap Kiki. Tap the Kiki, spam angels. Make the angels go, go, go.
Boom. And it's got a lot of other fun combos built in it, too. You can kind of look through lists and get an idea of what it's trying to do. It's got some good sideboard creatures, too, to have alternate kind of win cons or alternate combos to beat certain decks. It's a pretty, I mean, Alex has had a blast playing it. It's a hard deck to play against, that's for sure. I mean, you can catch a lot of opponents on it just because something like Court of Calling gives you kind of infinite possibilities,
it is
in a sense.
Ultimate toolbox card, and it is the reason this deck exists.
Yeah, so, I mean, it kind of plays off of what Pod was doing before it got banned. It's kind of similar where you just have a lot of good interactions between good creatures. A lot of them are strong and powerful on their own, but you mix in these combos and you have instant wins. You can generate infinite life in some builds. I mean, it's just, it's a good deck. It's got, it's probably a little harder to get used to pilot. I would say it's a higher skill level deck for sure. So you're gonna make a lot of mistakes picking it up, but it's a very powerful deck, and it's one of those ones that kind of always has an out to the situation. I mean, it's always got something you can pull off. So not a very linear deck. It's all over the place, but it's a blast to play against and to play. So next up we have Delver. Delver is sort of the quintessential tempo deck, I would say. For anyone who's unfamiliar with the card Delver of Secrets, it's a 1-drop, 1 blue. It's a 1-1 originally.
Comes out as a 1-1.
Yeah, so you got a 1-1, and at the beginning of each of your turns, you may reveal the top card of your deck. If it's an instant or sorcery, you flip Delver. So when you flip the Delver on the other side, it's one of the Innistrad, like, flip cards. On the other side is a 3-1 flyer.
3-2 flyer. 3-2?
Oh, nice. So a 3-2, it's Insectile Aberration is its new name when it flips. But a 3-2 flyer, I mean, that's a pretty fast clock, especially if it flips on turn 2. So the rest of the deck is really composed of Snapcasters and Serum Visions and
Bolts.
Bolts, yeah. What's the one to look at their hand, draw a card?
Gataxian Probe. Yes.
So Gataxian Probes to kind of peek at their hand and draw a lot of cantrippy kind of spells. I mean, so really you're trying to control them enough to where they can't ever really get going. You're killing off some of their early threats, and then you're putting a lot of pressure on them with damage. Grixis Delver is probably the most popular right now, so you're also running things like Young Pyromancer. Yeah,
it also gets Gurmog Angler.
Gurmog Angler,
and
yeah,
to enable the Delve, this deck has really picked up on Jace Vryn's Prodigy as a 3 of.
Yeah, it's been popping up on all the lists now. So, I mean, it's a good tempo deck. You're trying to put down a threat, grind them out with that threat while doing things to stop their game plan. It's got a lot of good fight against a lot of decks. It's running some counter magic, so that helps against a lot of the combo decks. And, I mean, it's a fun deck to play. The biggest weakness of it is if they kill your threat and you don't draw another threat, you're looking pretty bad. It also runs like Thought Scour, mill yourself two and draw a card to kind of enable the Delve cards.
Yep.
More.
With the Thought Scour, it actually enables turn 2 Gurmog Anglers.
Yep. So they can jam out Gurmogs real fast. I mean, it's a powerful deck and it's got a lot of good interactions into it. So if you're into tempo, that's definitely a good choice. So let's see, going down the list next, we have Zoo. Rob, you going to talk about Zoo?
Yeah, sure. Zoo is a heavily creature-based deck, and they're low-costing creatures. A big thing with these creatures also is they're benefiting from your mana base. You have creatures in there like Wild Nacatl, which will get +1/+1 if you control a mountain, or +1/+1 if you control a forest is the other one? Or is it a plains?
Plains.
Okay, plains. And then there's Curdape. Curdape is another 1-drop. And if you have a mountain, then it gets +1/+2. So there's a whole bunch of creatures in there that benefit just from your mana base. And they go wide with the number of creatures they have on board, and they beat you down that way. They have a utility creature in the form of Goreclan Rampager, so that they could bloodthirst it for a red and a green and give target creature +4/+4 and trample. And then the spell base, too, is mainly removal. You've got Searing Blazes, Path of Exiles, Lightning Bolts, and Atarkus Command. And Atarkus Command just being probably the second best command, I would say, in Modern, only second to Colligan's Command.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, Zoo, it's a pretty straightforward aggro deck. I mean, you're looking at efficient creatures for their mana costs, plenty of removal to get things out of the way. It's not trying to be cute with pump spells mostly. I mean, you've got, you know, the Gore Clans, but aside from that, it's sort of like taking the Infect and saying, instead of counting to 10, I'm going to count to 20, play a little bit more fair, but I'm going to have a bunch of creatures to ensure that I'm swinging every turn and I'm have some removal in there to get things out of my way. I mean, it pops up in a variety of colors. Collected Company pops up in the list a lot now, too.
Right now, it's been popping up with a lot more blue because of the Knight of the Reliquary and Retreat to Coral Home combo.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's a real versatile deck. I mean, as far as colors go, when people say Zoo, I mean, I don't even really have a specific color I go to. Usually red-green.
Red-green is a starting point.
Yeah, Naya is pretty popular. But yeah, so, I mean, you can see lists all over the place. You'll see a lot of variety in Zoo lists. I mean, it's a pretty straightforward deck to pilot. It's got some answers to the combo decks in the form of Path for some of the creature-based combos, but really, I mean, it's on its plan to bolt you and beat you down with creatures. So let's see. Next up, we have Living End.
So Living End is a deck that has been coined from the actual card named Living End, which has no converted mana cost, suspend for 4. Pay 4 to suspend for 3 turns. And when you remove the final time counter from it, all creatures from all the battlefields are exiled, put all creatures from graveyards into exile. Creatures that went from graves to exile now enter the battlefield, and creatures that went from the battlefield to exile now go to the graveyard. So what you're trying to do is you play a lot of creatures with the cycling mechanic. Most of these creatures come from the Shards of Alara block, where you pay one mana to cycle the creature, discard it, draw a card. So you have a way to filter through your deck at high speed. Then you're going to break the rules of Magic once again with the Cascade cards, either Violent Outburst or Demonic Dread. Violent Outburst is instant speed, colorless, green, and red. Reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal a non-land card with converted mana cost less than Violent Outburst. The only card in your deck you can reveal is Living End. Living End is now cast off the Cascade effect, and you put all those cycled creatures onto the battlefield. Its way to combat the format is it is the land destruction deck of the format, where it plays multiple copies of Beast Within and Fulminator Mage to blow up mana bases and just make it impossible for your opponent to even stop you.
Yeah, so I mean, early game you're looking at basically cycling creatures, drawing through your deck, blowing up their lands, playing with their land base some, and then hopefully casting a Violent Outburst right into Living End. Usually beating them down pretty quick from that point. I mean, you usually get a bunch of creatures in. The funniest part, I think, about Living End, though, is the creatures that are in it, like, oh, it is a...
They're ugly, big crew. They're big, chunky beasts.
They're big, chunky cards that were just never played, and this is that case of card A and set B is really super good with card C and set Y.
Yeah, it's a gangly crew of cards that all just... It's really all they're looking for is cards with cycle. I mean, that's really the biggest criteria.
Because the biggest thing is once you cast it off the Cascade, is you're literally casting it. You don't have to pay the suspend cost.
Yeah, it just goes
it bypasses it. So I cheated by putting all these big creatures in the graveyard, and now I wiped your board and put my big chunky monsters on the field. Like, it's cheating.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, also notable, is this still the cheapest modern deck?
It just might be. I can't be 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure it is.
It's definitely on the low end of the budget. It's dirt cheap.
But, it's got two other interactions I wanted to mention about it real quickly. Definitely. With its mana base, you run a... four of a Forbidden Orchard from the Kamigawa block, where it adds any color to your mana pool, so you're not restricted to mana, and they will get a 1/1 non-flying spirit. This allows you to use Demonic Dread, so you actually have a legal target to cast it, to get the Cascade to go off. And some versions of the list can just jam Splinter Twin combo in the deck.
We won't get too deep on that one, but that was a wild brew that popped up for a while, where it was basically running the Splinter Twin combo and just the Living End deck altogether. Not horrible. It had some popularity for a while. I haven't seen it around too much lately.
Living End gets hit by a lot of Grave Hate.
Yeah. It's real susceptible to Grave Hate. Grave Hate is kind of one of those things in Modern, though, that it ebbs and flows. I mean, like, it's super prevalent sometimes. A lot of people aren't running it at other times. I mean,
people are going to have it. Yeah. It's just something you've got to be prepared for.
And with Delve becoming so much more popular, you're going to see it more consistently.
Yeah, absolutely. Snapcast, there's a lot of other graveyard interactions going into Modern, so it makes sense that people would have it. But yeah, I mean, Living End, it's a solid combo deck, not a bad one to enter the format with. All right, next we got Boggles. Chris, this is you.
Boggles, all right. So typically you have 12 creatures, 8 of which are some sort of hexproof, either through Slippery Boggle or Glade Cover Scout. Just a plain little 1/1, you know, can't be targeted by the enemy. Awesome for the format where most of the removal is target, minus Liliana. And it's about breaking cards like Daybreak Coronet and Ethereal Armor. So I put a bunch of cheap enchantments on the creature. It goes from a 1/1 to a 2/2 to a 3/3. I slam something like Ethereal Armor, which it gets +1/+1. For each enchantment on the battlefield. So now it goes from like a 3/3 to like a 6/6 or a 7/7. But you're using these enchantments that they do one thing, give it +1/+1, and something else, whether it's First Strike, Totem Armor, Life Link, something of that nature, Trample.
Protection from creatures.
Protection from creatures with the, I forget the name of it. I just started running it here lately just because it's efficient. But eventually I call it, like, you're just trying to build Megatron is what you're doing.
Yeah.
And you're trying to turn 3, turn 4, you know, If it gets a little hairy, I'll play a Daybreak Coronet, gives it +3/+3. First Strike, Vigilance, and Lifelink, maybe live a little bit longer.
Damn.
You know, so it's just about people walking by and them going, is that really a 15-15? Yes. It's a 15-15 First Strike, Lifelink, Vigilance, Trampling Monster.
Wait, can this block Emrakul and actually beat it in combat?
It has a possibility if you have enough permanents out there.
Yeah, so I mean it's a deck that a lot of decks just have a hard time dealing with. You had a blast with it at States, right?
Yeah, it's fun. States. So, you know, I was on a 3-0 run and then went to 0-3 right after that. But if no one's prepared to deal with it, there's no real great sideboard for it. It's just Liliana. Do they have something that makes you sacrifice? Because they can't bolt it, they can't path it. They can't do anything that targets it, so...
Yeah. Like, even the go-to of Spellskite trying to answer it doesn't work all the time when you have Daybreak Coronets, because they can't redirect the Daybreak to a Spellskite that's unenchanted.
Yeah, so it has a lot of... And the green-white colors, it has a very open sideboard. Duke actually played this deck in 2013. Worlds took second with it. And it's just fun. If you want to see how big you can get a creature, it's the deck to do it. There's plenty of other enchantments out there to help you combat other decks, like Suppression Fields, the one that it gets rid of the graveyard,
Rest in Peace,
card, like utility cards that still pump your creatures because they're still enchantments. So, and it's just fun. It's fun. It's cheap. I would say the most expensive card was Daybreak Coronet, but it got reprinted, and it's like $10 now.
Yeah. So it's pretty good, easy deck to get into. I mean, it's a sweet deck. I've had fun watching you play it, definitely. All right, so let's get into Tron now. So before we get too deep into Tron, first, the Tron lands themselves.
Urza's Power Plant, Urza's Mine, Urza's Tower. Power Plant and Mine will add one colorless normally. They will add two colorless if you have a copy of the other two on the battlefield. Urza's Tower adds one colorless normally. It will add three if there's a copy of the other two on the battlefield.
So you hear people say assembling Tron, and that's what they're talking about, reference the Voltron here. But if you have all three of these Tron lands out, you're producing seven mana with the three lands. So there's a lot of busted things you can do with this. Now, there are three versions of this deck. Green-red, I would say, is the most powerful. It's the most consistent. It's the most prevalent in the format. You also have mono-blue Tron, which is a pretty good budget deck. It's not nearly as expensive. It's easier to get into.
You're not putting out money for Grove of the Burn Willows.
Absolutely, yeah. And then you also have blue-white Tron, which is probably the least popular. I've seen it picking up a little bit more. It kind of comes in and out of the format from time to time. But that's more of a control deck that just kind of happens into Tron. It doesn't try as hard to assemble Tron. So green-red Tron, you're running a lot of things like Expedition Map to search out Tron pieces, Ancient Stirrings that lets you take an artifact or a color. It's a colorless card, right?
Yes.
So there's some artifacts you can grab. You can also grab the Tron lands themselves. And you're just trying to jam out a very fast Karn Liberated or what's the light? The Worm Coil Engine. And then they're running a lot of Ugins now too. So you're really just trying to cheat out one of these big threats early on. They're all pretty powerful. The deck itself is pretty powerful. It runs into some hate with things like Ghost Quarters and the other
Fulminator Mage.
Fulminator Mage, yeah. Old but the other Moraine. Colorless. No, the other
Tectonic
colorless
Edge.
Tectonic Edge is what I'm looking for. So there's a lot of decks that run these kind of incidentally that can destroy your Tron lands, keep you off Tron, things like that. But it's a pretty powerful deck. It's very fast. It probably has the best late game of any deck in the format.
Cast Emrakul is the best thing you can do.
Yeah, so I mean, it's got, you'll see some variation. The mono blue tends to run like the Mind Slaver lock with Academy Ruins, where you take control of their turn. When you do that, you have to sack the Mind Slaver, then use Academy Ruins to get it back. And it requires a lot of mana to do this, but Tron obviously is the deck to do it with. So you just lock an opponent out of the game. Jerry had a hilarious time with Mind Slaver.
Yeah, someone Mind Slavered me and made me cast an Ad Nauseam without Angel's Grace or Phyrexian Unlife, killing me with my own Ad Nauseam.
Yeah, so we'll get into more of those cards a little bit when we talk about the Ad Nauseam deck, but pretty hilarious interaction. I'd never seen that done, but
it was awesome. I hadn't either, so it was new.
But yeah, so Tron, I mean, it's a big mana deck. It's a late game deck. I mean, it's got some controlly answers in each of the versions. Blue and blue-white get more controlly, whereas red-green is looking at more ways to jam out those Tron lands as quickly as possible.
The blue and blue-white version, they also play multiple copies of the counterspell Condescend, blue X. You pay X, counter target spell, unless they pay X, you're playing Tron lands, they're never going to pay that X. Yep, and you get the Scry 2 on top of it.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a very good card. I mean, they have some good counter magic, they have some good cards. What type of player, though, do you think is drawn to Tron?
Depends on the Tron variation. The blue-white Tron deck, it that draws a lot of control players. Yeah, it can. It's got the control play. And the green-red Tron deck kind of draws the... I like big dragons type player.
Yeah. I want to cast my big things quick.
Yep.
Stompy.
Yep. So there you go. So, I mean, Tron, it's a good deck. Green Red's had a lot of popularity lately. It kind of, like all modern decks, it comes in and out of favor, but it's definitely been on the uptick for a few months now. All right. So now, Chris, let's talk Elves.
Elves is just recently started coming into modern more prevalently as a tribal deck. Just because we got cards like Collected Company coming in, and then with the was it Origins when they started printing some of these new elf cards like Shaman of the Pack and Dwinen's Elite?
Yes.
So we got some more utility cards, but it's just like the Legacy one. I'm going to put creatures out there, turn it into a mana engine, you know, and try and cheat my way through. So you have the Nettle Sentinel and the other elf that. Tap three.
Heritage Druid.
Tap three, put three in the pool. And what you do is essentially is you try and tap as many as hopefully three Nettle Sentinels. Tap three, put three in the pool, play one cost creature.
And then whenever you play a green creature, the Nettle Sentinels untap.
And so you do this a couple times. You got more mana than you ever really need. Then you have the potential to even go and convoke to get like an Azuri. Which will give you, essentially, it's like an overrun. It's what, +5/+5, and trample?
No, it actually is a true overrun. It's +3/+3, and trample. But you get to tap multiple sources of mana.
You have enough mana that I've seen it swing for, it was like 62 or something ridiculous.
So you're generating a bunch of dudes, you're playing a bunch of cards out, pumping them huge. And
yeah. With the convoke, some people still run the traditional Craterhoof Behemoth, something like that. Gives them all... +1/+1 for gives each the crater hoof and the creatures +1/+1 for each creature on the field.
So usually a lethal, pretty easy.
Yeah, and it gives them trample still. So it gets ridiculous really quick. It's just I'm gonna try and make as much mana as possible and use it to cast big things or use it to cheat big things into play as efficiently as possible.
So, speaking of Collected Company, we also have the Collected Company combo deck that's popped up. This was sort of built on the remnants of Birthing Pod. It uses Malyra, and what's the other piece of the combo?
You've got Malyra, Silvok Outcast, Kitchen Finx, and you have Viscera Seer. Murderous Red Cap. And you can also use the card from Cons, Anafenza, Kintry Spirit. Yeah. Not the foremost, Kintry Spirit.
Yeah. Yep, so with this, you can generate infinite damage towards your opponent with the red-black one. Which one was that?
It's Murderous Red Cap. You use Viscera Seer to sacrifice the Murderous Red Cap. It would return to the battlefield with a -1/-1 counter, but because Malyra Silvok Outcast is on the battlefield, it can't get it. Or if Anafenza Kintry Spirit's on the battlefield, it will get a +1/+1 counter. And because of the rules enacted in Shadowmoor, you can't have +1/+1 counter and a -1/-1 counter at the same time.
Yeah, they remove each other. So yeah, so these persist creatures, usually when they die, they come back with a -1/-1 counter. When they die again, they're gone for good. Because you eliminate the possibility of them having the -1/-1 counter, they just keep coming back to the battlefield each time they're sacked with the Seer. So you can either do infinite damage to your opponent, you can gain infinite life with Kitchen Finx, and then you can also get infinite bolster triggers with Anafenza.
Yes.
So the cards themselves in this deck function okay if it doesn't combo. It's not a great deck without a combo going off.
Its only out is it has to have Gavinny Township on the battlefield, and this deck tends to run 3 to 4 copies of it.
Yeah. So it's not a horrible deck minus combo, but then with the combo it does some super unfair things. It also has that same presence that Splinter Twin does where you have to respect the combo at any time because a collected company can happen at instant speed. So you're always respecting the combo. You can beat them down with some of your creatures while they're trying to defend against the combo and just kind of kill them accidentally, so to speak, without ever casting collected company. It's a pretty fun deck. It's an intricate deck. It's definitely a deck that always has an out. I mean, you can respond to things by going infinite with life. You can respond to things by doing infinite damage to your opponent. I mean, so you've got a lot of play with it. It's a pretty fun deck. I mean, it looks like a lot of fun to pilot. I know when we were doing testing, I piloted a little bit. And I mean, it's not... It looks a lot more complicated than it is. Once you get a few reps with it, you start to understand how the deck functions, and it's fairly easy to pilot, but you always have extra lines of play. So if you're the type of player who likes to look for additional ways out or how can you cobble this win together, last-ditch effort kind of things, it's great at that.
Well, and as long as they don't have either a graveyard answer or an exile answer, the really neat thing is with Visitor Seer, they can sack to it and scry. Remember, you get to scry with Visitor Seer, so... Because it used to be infinite life was a win. Now, thanks to Twin, it's not really a guaranteed win because I gain a million life. Well, I create a million dudes. But, okay, so what I'll do is I'll scry down, sacking this Sphinx or whatever I need to my murderous red cap, and now I just hit you with a million life, and you lose.
Yep. All right, so next up, we've got Scapeshift. This is the deck that I play the majority of the time. It's a very control-y deck that wins with a combo. I know we've talked about it a few times in the cast, but we'll just stick to the overview. So you're looking to, you have Search for Tomorrow, and you have Secure a Tribe Elder, who both help you ramp into lands faster. One's a creature that you sack to dig up a basic, put into play untapped, or tapped, and then one is a card that you can cast for three. It's a sorcery, or you can suspend it for one green, and it'll cast in two turns. It gets two suspend counters on it. Search up a land, put it into play, untapped, or basic land. So what you're trying to do is ramp into lands while controlling your opponent, and then cast Scapeshift with seven or eight lands in the battlefield. You're going to sacrifice all of those and go search up a bunch of mountains and a Valakut, or maybe two if you need to do extra damage. And Valakut does three damage for each mountain when it enters the battlefield, as long as you control five other mountains. So... Seven lands is the earliest you can go off with this deck, and you'll hit for 18 damage. You can wait till the next turn and sacrifice an additional to get an extra Valakut and double it up to 36 damage. So it's got a pretty explosive kill. It's got a pretty, I mean, it's a consistent kill usually. Usually you also have counterspell backup when you're going to cast it, so you can fight over it a little bit if you need be. The newer versions now are running Bring to Light. I wish I had more to tell you about this version because the cards have not come in the mail yet. But I am super excited. It's adding either black or white, so that way you can use Bring to Light to search up your Scapeshift and cast it that way. You can also kind of toolbox it a little bit and grab like sweeper spells like Damnation or Wrath of God, things like that. So it's a good deck. It's got a good sideboard to it. I mean, it's a ton of fun to play. I would definitely recommend it. Like for the players who are, there's no... super late game control deck in Modern. So if you're the type of players looking for the best, the next best thing to that, I think Scapeshift or Twin is the way to go, and I prefer Scapeshift. So going down the list next, speaking of control, we have the Grixis control deck. This is a deck that's playing things like Tassigur as their threats, Gurmog Anglers, and a lot of removal and things like Terminate, Lightning Bolts, Jace's Vryn's Prodigy is a really popular one now too. Some decks run Liliana. It's a control deck. I mean, there's not much more to say about it here. It's got a lot. Doesn't lean quite as heavily on counter spells because of Jace Vryn's Prodigy. You're looking more at removal spells for answers.
Yep. Some versions eschew out Cryptic Command for Blood Moon.
Yeah. Yeah. And I honestly, yeah, the Grixis Moon kind of build of it, I like a lot. Cryptic Command's kind of a hard card to play in this deck with the three blue mana is kind of demanding. It leans more into red and black than blue, so you really don't want those high blue mana costs. But it's more of a... It taps out a little bit more than your typical control deck, more of a tap-out control kind of style, more answer things after they've hit the battlefield rather than trying to counter them. This is one of the things that keeps me away from it. If you're more of a permission player, it might not be your style, but it's definitely worth checking out the list. I mean, it's a solid control deck. For a while there, it was going on a real tear, showing up in top eights constantly, and that's rare for a control deck in Modern. All right, so next we'll talk about Black-White Tokens. Black-White Tokens is... The most similar deck to in the format would be like Abzan, a deck like that, because it runs a lot of hand disruption. It also runs token generators. So you're looking at like Lingering Souls, the other three drop white, the three or two hybrid mana.
You would have Lingering Souls, Spectral Procession, and some versions are going into Promise of Boonray, a two mana enchantment. Whenever a creature you control dies, sacrifice Promise of Boonray, get 4/1/1 spirits.
And then Bitter Blossom is also one that pops up in a bunch of lists where at the beginning of each upkeep you lose a life, put in a 1/1 token, a fairy token with flying. So they're all flying tokens, they're all 1/1s, and what you're looking to do is disrupt your opponent's hand, kind of get them off their game plan. You're playing your tokens. You're also running a lot of enchantments that give +1/+1 to all your creatures. So you're pumping them up a little bit, swinging in, and just trying to beat them down with these tokens while keeping them off of their game plan.
Yep.
And then now they started splashing Sorin because he's in color. He gives the tokens +1/+1.
Sorin's been shown up as a 4/4 in a lot of lists.
Yeah, you're losing life to Bitter Blossom, but you're gaining it back in Sorin. So yeah. It's just
Summer playing now Gideon, Ally of Zendikar, just to, hey, look, permanent Anthem effects. Yep. He can't stop it.
Pump the team, maybe get 2 or 3 out of them in certain matchups. Yeah, so I mean, it's an attrition-based deck. You're casting most of your creature spells, essentially, are getting you 2 creatures or 3 creatures for 1 card. So you're trying to grind out your opponent on this value. It's hard for them to answer. There's not a lot of sweepers in the format right now. Then also, you know, Lingering Souls has flashbacks. That's extra value. You end up getting 4 tokens out of 1 card. I mean, it's a real grindy, real attrition-based deck. It's similar to Abzan where it doesn't have any outstanding matchups, but doesn't have anything that's super weak to either. Yeah. It's got the tools to beat anything in the format, but it's also susceptible to anything in the format.
And some versions of it will issue out the Inquisition's Thoughtseize plan, and they'll go into the Soul Sisters plan, where they'll play Soul's Attendant and Essence Wardens, creatures that are all 1/1s for 1 that say whenever a creature enters the battlefield, you gain 1 life. So what happens is all these token generators, a Spectral Procession now gains you 3 life. And now, you know, Promise would gain you a 4 life. And Bitter Blossom now costs you 0 life per upkeep.
Yep.
So what happens is you generate all this extra life and you'll play cards like a Johnny's Pride Mate alongside it or Sarah Ascendant, which get a bunch of power and toughness because of all the life you've gained.
Yeah, so actually we're pretty much wrapping up on black-white tokens. Let's talk about Soul Sisters. Soul Sisters... How would you explain Soul Sisters?
Plays the same way as black-white tokens does. It just doesn't play the disruptive game plan. It plays the high-value game plan of just valuable creatures.
Gaining tons of life.
Gaining tons and tons of life. Some versions, very, very deep versions, will play Felidar Sovereign just to try to get that, hey, I got 40 life, I won the game.
That's hilarious. I hadn't even thought about that with him. That's not horrible.
At the top end of the deck, they'll sometimes splash even green for Anaphens of the Foremost to hit on the graveyard decks, as well as being another value creature that charges up your tokens, that'll charge up your Johnny's Pride Mates, your Sarah Ascendants. And the top end of the deck, it'll also run Creekwood Liege, which puts a 1/1 green-black worm creature token onto the battlefield. Creekwood Liege gives all your black creatures +1/+1. It also gives all your green creatures +1/+1. So now these are all 3/3 dudes that are pummeling on through.
Yep. So, I mean, you're beating them down with little white weenie-style cards. You're gaining a bunch of life in the process. Gaining a 10, 20, 30 life, I mean, that usually beats burn pretty much outright. They can't really come back from that. It gives a lot of other decks troubles, too. So, I mean, it's a fun, disruptive deck. It's pops in and out of tournaments from time to time and usually does pretty well. Well, not usually. That's not fair to say. But I've seen it do pretty well quite often.
If you're not prepared for it, it will run away with the tournament.
It'll wreck you. Yeah. All right. So now we're going back into some more control lists. Lantern Control is one that is becoming more popular. What did it win recently? Was that a GP?
Yeah, it top-8ed a GP.
It took down something, too. Huh?
It did.
Yeah. But anyway, regardless. So... Lantern Control is an artifact-based control deck where you're looking to play things like Ensnaring Bridge to lock out your opponent where they can't attack. It's creatures with power that's greater than the cards in your hand can't attack you, which you're playing lots of cheap drop artifacts, so usually you have no cards in hand or 1 or 2, so nothing meaningful can really attack you. You're also looking at things like, I mean, the main gist of the deck is Lantern of Insight. Both players play with the top card of their deck revealed. And then something like, what are the two ones, Grindstone?
You'll have Codex Shredder, which says tap target player, discards the top card of their library and moves it to the graveyard.
And then the bell, right?
And then Ghoulcaller's Bell. Each player moves the top card of the library to the graveyard.
So what you're looking to do is use a little bit of Hand Disruption and Ensnaring Bridge to kind of lock out whatever their opening seven is. And then from that point, you're looking to just skim cards off the top of their deck if they're in problem for you.
You dictate what they're going to draw. Yep. You want to make it to where they can't answer your Ensnaring Bridge or your Lantern of Insight plus Codex Shredder combo, and you just tell them what they're going to draw for the rest of the game.
So you see it land on top? Awesome. Have that land. You see an answer to Ensnaring Bridge? Burp, skim that off the top. The main win plan is literally to just grind out their deck through this process, but there also are, the newer versions have a few more. So you have this Pyrite Spell Bomb.
Pyrite, where they loop Pyrite Spell Bomb back on top of their deck after sacrificing it to shock target player. They'll use Academy Ruins to put it back on top. You draw it again. That's a grindy way to win. You have the 2-mana enchantment that says tap 2 artifacts you control to deal 1 damage to target player. And some decks will splash blue for Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas, where you activate his ultimate to then deal the number of damage times 2 times the number of artifacts you control directly at their face.
Usually lethal, yeah. But the Aether Spell Grid is the one where you can tap 2 to ping them for 1 damage. That's the most popular version
That's the easiest one to run, definitely.
Yeah, usually at the end of their turn, each of their turns, you're dealing 2 or 3 to the face. You get them out of the game pretty quick. I mean, it's a super grindy deck. It's definitely skill intensive. You have to be super mindful of the clock. I mean, I don't think I could ever recommend a new player coming into the format on this deck.
You have to know what you're playing against.
Yeah,
every single time.
Yeah, it's very dependent on your knowledge of your opponent's decks. If you want to enter the format with this deck, just be prepared to lose even more so than normal at the beginning. But once you get good with this deck, it's a super powerful deck. It's one of the better control decks in the format too, albeit sort of a different control plan. So the next one on the list we've got here is Jeskai Control. So red, blue, white. This deck was popular about a year ago, a little more than a year, and it's kind of fallen out of favor recently.
Especially popular when Pod was around.
Yeah,
this
absolutely
was the go-to non-Pod deck.
Yeah, so, excuse me, you're looking at a deck that it's your standard control deck. You're running a bunch of counter spells. You're running Bolts and Lightning Helixes to spot removal and gain some life back, Path to Exile to remove things. Usually the win is coming through like Celestial Colonnades and Snapcasters and Bolts, things of that sort to grind them out. It can win the game fairly quickly once you've stabilized between Bolts and Snaps and things like that. But, I mean, it's not as popular as a deck. I mean, the biggest problem with control in this format is that you can lock your Splinter Twin opponent out, answer to everything in their hand. They have no cards in hand. You feel pretty good. You're about to start the beatdown plan with Colonnade. They draw Serum Visions. They cast it. They scry. They find Splinter Twin and Deceiver, and suddenly they win. So it's a tough deck to play because sometimes your opponent just gets it. Sometimes they don't have anything and they just draw right into it. So it's hard to recommend this deck as much as I like it. It's one of the few decks that still play Sphinx's Revelation, which is my favorite card ever. But sad day, you just can't really play it right now. But it's not a horrible deck. Some run like Wall of Omens to draw some extra cards and Restoration Angel to get extra uses out of Snaps and to flash Wall of Omens to draw some more cards. And you'll see it pop up in top eights from time to time, but for the most part, it's not really showing much.
A good pilot with the deck will perform well with it. It just takes a lot of practice to get this one down.
Yeah, and it's a mix of that and the fact that sometimes they just have it, which in Modern happens more than in Standard, I would say. But, all right, cool. So let's get on down the list. Next, we got Ad Nauseam. Jerry, you're the resident expert.
Ad Nauseam, this is my Modern deck. This is what I like to play mostly. Have it all foiled out for y'all if you ever play against me. But the premier combo of the deck is to play Angel's Grace, 1-mana white instant that says you can't lose the game this turn, your opponent can't win the game this turn. Any damage that would reduce your life total to less than 1 just keeps it at 1 instead. And it has the split second mechanic, meaning no spell can be put on top of the stack once the spell's on the stack. So you resolve your Angel's Grace. And then after it's resolved, you then cast Ad Nauseam. Ad Nauseam is a 5-mana instant. Says reveal the top card of your library. You lose life equal to its converted mana cost and put it in your hand. You may repeat this process. Because you can't lose the game this turn, you're going to put every card in your deck into your hand. So you're going to have a hand of 40-something cards. And then you have a choice of several types of kills. The most consistent and popular one is the full instant speed kill with Exile 3 Simian Spirit Guides. Play Lightning Storm. Lightning Storm says this card deals 3 damage plus X, X damage to target player or creature, X being the number of charge counters on it. Has the active is the instant card with the activated ability. Discard a land card from your hand to put 2 charge counters on this card. So you'll discard 9 lands out of your 40-something card hand to make it deal 21 to their face.
This is probably one of the more fringe combo decks that's still very powerful.
Yes, it even...
I would say that, I mean, it's surprisingly consistent considering how, like, fringe it would be.
It surprises me that it's still fringe despite it, you know, top 8ing a GP recently and in top 16, the most recent GP as well. The other outs it has is it will play Spoils of the Vault with Laboratory Maniac, which Spoils of the Vault says name a card, reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal named card, and you exile all those cards, and then you lose life equal to the number of cards revealed. With Angel's Grace being done, you don't lose the game, so you're going to name a card that does not exist in your deck. So you'll name Forest, flip your deck over. Laboratory Maniac says whenever you draw a card from your library that doesn't have any cards in it, you actually win the game. So you're going to just win the game on your draw step.
Yep, so I mean, it's a powerful combo deck. It's not the hardest to pick up. I mean, it's compared to some of the other combo decks, it's not too intensive.
But no, it's not too intensive. It definitely
has its oddities, that's for sure.
It's got a lot of, you're going to get a lot of neat, interesting interactions, understanding what it means to actually be at zero life with Phyrexian Unlife on the battlefield, yeah, understanding oh yeah. loss of life versus damage. Like, this deck can, if you're not careful and you miss interactions, some of these interactions will get you game warnings because you're missing important points. Like, you can't, even if you have Phyrexian Unlife on the battlefield, if you're at 1 life, you can't actually use your Besiege to put yourself at -1 because you don't have the life to pay.
Yeah, so it's definitely an interesting combo deck. It plays off some weird interactions, so it's going to take a lot of repetition to get a feel for it. But all right, on down the list. What is this Hulk deck you were telling me about?
Hulk Footsteps. This deck...
I'm excited to hear about this.
This deck top 8ed a GP, and it's fallen under the radar. And I'm going to take a shot in the dark and say it top 8ed because Lantern Control's picking up. Because this deck beats Lantern Control pretty sideways.
Okay. All right.
The deck's filtration, as far as the combo's concerned, is its looting spells. Faithless Lootings, Is It Charms are its key ways of doing it. And it got a lot of pickup with the card Tygon Scheming. From Khans of Tarkir, look at the top 5 cards of your library and put any of those cards into your graveyard and put the rest back on top in any order. So what'll end up happening is you usually look at 5 and put all 5 in there. The actual combo itself is to cast either a copy of Footsteps of the Goryeo. It is a sorcery from, I believe, Saviors of Kamigawa, but it's from that block at least. Costs 2 colorless and a black. Return a creature from the graveyard to the battlefield. At the end of the turn, sacrifice that creature. The creature you will grab is Protean Hulk, a 7-mana 5/5, where it says whenever Protean Hulk dies, search your library for any number of creatures as long as the total converted mana cost of all those creatures is 6 or less. So what you'll grab first is you will grab Viscerous here. As we mentioned, 1-1 for 1, sacrifice a creature, scry, and you will grab Body Double. A 5-mana clone effect where it clones a creature in your graveyard. So it comes on the battlefield, you're going to clone Protean Hulk. You will use Viscerous Seer to sacrifice the Body Double Protean Hulk. You will then do the Protean Hulk trigger again, this time grabbing Mog Fanatic and Revelark. Mog Fanatic is a 1-1 for 1, sacrifice it, deal 1 damage to target creature or player. You'll sacrifice the Mog Fanatic to its own ability to deal 1 to them. You'll then use Viscerous Seer to sacrifice your Revelark. Revelark says whenever it leaves the battlefield, you may choose 2 creatures, any number of creatures from your graveyard with power 2 or less and put them onto the battlefield. You will choose Mog Fanatic, and you will choose Body Double. Body Double will now become a copy of Revelark. You'll use Viscerous Seer, and you'll use Mog Fanatic again to deal 1 to them. Use Viscerous Seer to sacrifice Body Double as a Revelark, so it brings back Body Double Mog Fanatic. Do it over and over and over again.
Yep, so that one goes a little deep. I've actually never seen this in the wild, so I was pretty excited to hear about this list. But, I mean, whew, what a I don't even know what to call that combo. I mean, that's pretty wild. That's an example of going deep in Modern, where you can find these combo decks that, I mean, there's got to be hundreds of combos in Modern.
Well, the neat thing about this, it has a very consistent turn two.
Wow, really?
Its downside, Grave Hate.
Yeah,
this is the ultimate Grave Hate deck, and its combo isn't really instant speed either.
Yeah, so I mean, this one I wouldn't really recommend to anybody right now, just because its fate is to be seen.
It is a known quantity; people will hate it.
Yeah, it's a flash in the pan right now. I don't know. It's been a while since it's popped up, and it might be a while before it pops up again. But hey, maybe one of our listeners will be the person to do it. So who knows?
If you like Reanimator style decks, where you pull creatures back from your graveyard, this is a deck for you.
And slowly kill one damage at a time.
One damage, one interaction at a time.
All right, so going down the list, Rob, you want to talk about Grishul Brand?
Okay, this is the instant speed reanimator deck that's been running rampant for the past few months now.
Yeah.
And this utilizes Goryeo's Vengeance instead, which is a one and a black return target legendary creature from the graveyard to the battlefield. At the end of this turn, exile it. So the target creature you're going after is Grishul Brand. And the way you get him in the graveyard is a majority of your spells are card draws, so it puts you over your 7-card hand limit. And then you also have Faithless Looting, which you draw 2 and you discard 2. So that sets up for your discard. And this deck is 100% all-in on this combo. There's one other alternate win con that you can go. So with Grishul Brand then, you pay 7 life and you draw 7 cards. And you use this to just fill your hand. It has spells of Nourishing Shoal and World Spine Worm. Nourishing Shoal allows you to discard a card, a green card, and gain life equal to its converted mana cost. When World Spine Worm, that's 11 life. So you're going to gain 11 life, and you're going to pay 7 and draw 7 and repeat that process until you get Beborgamus Enraged into the graveyard through another Faithless Looting. And it has ways of generating more mana in that it has Simeon Spirit Guides, it has Desperate Ritual, and it has Manamorphous. So you can make any mana that you want and that you need, and eventually you'll get Beborgamus onto the field, and then you'll discard land cards out of your hand to deal 3 damage to target opponent. Another alternate way to win this is with Through the Breach. So if you don't get to your combo, you can Through the Breach either Grishul Brand onto the field, Beborgamus onto the field, or even World Spine Worm onto the field. Because then you swing with World Spine Worm, and then at the end of your turn, you sacrifice it. Well, when World Spine Worm goes to the graveyard, I believe it is, from the battlefield, when it dies.
Yes, when it dies.
You get 3 5/5 worms with trample, and World Spine Worm is a 15/15 with trample. So those are the two big ways to win with it. The only bad thing is it is very fragile. You're all in on this combo. There's real no protection for you, except for the limited supplies you have in your sideboard. And even still, if you disrupt too much with your combo, you're diluting the deck too much, and you're not going to do well.
Yeah, but I mean, really the strength of it is it's instant speed, and what's the earliest you can go off?
Earliest? Turn 1.
Yeah, so so it goes right out of the gate as fast as you really possibly can, and I mean, yeah, it's
more resistant to Grave Hate. That's a huge point.
Yeah, and it's a bane to play against. Like, it's got that same Splinter Twin spooky combo kind of vibe where, like, you just have to respect it. You have to be ready to fight it when it comes out, so... So what type of player you think would like it, Rob? You?
Yeah, yeah, definitely me. Your combo players are definitely going to be drawn to this, and if not, at least give it a shot. It is a very fun deck to play. And also your aggro players. It gives you something a little different. Outside of that, if you like games to go a little bit longer and to be able to play your threats, maybe not, mainly because you run no green in your deck. So you cannot cast Beborgamus, who's 4/2 red and 2 green, and you cannot cast your World Spine Worm.
Yeah. So, all right, let's get out of combo land, and we'll take a detour back to control for a little bit here. Talk about Esper Gifts. So, Esper Gifts is a deck that I played for a while, and actually, now that I'm looking at it, I kind of want to sleeve it back up again. But it's an Esper control deck, and most of the list functions just like an Esper control deck. I won't get into that too much. But the combo kill that you have, or the combo, rather, it's not a combo kill, is a 1-card combo in Gifts Ungiven. So when you cast Gifts Ungiven, it costs blue and 3. It's instant speed. You search your deck for up to 4 cards. Reveal them to your opponent. They choose 2 to go to your graveyard, and the rest go to your hand. the wording's important because what you're looking for is just two cards. You're going to get a card called Unburial Rites, and then you're going to get a card, another creature card to go with it. There are a few, so we'll get in that in a second. The creature and Unburial Rites go to the graveyard because they're the only two you choose, so your opponent has to put them both in their graveyard. Unburial Rites has flashback. What is the flashback cost on
three
that?
Three colorless and a white.
Yep, all right. So three colors and a white for flashback. You flashback Unburial Rites, and that puts target creature from your graveyard into play. So you're basically cheating in big creatures. Now, it's a control deck, so the creatures kind of follow that vibe. The creatures most typically are Iona, Shield of Emeria. Nailed it. And then the other one is Elesh Norn, the Grand Cenobite. Look at me, killing it. I didn't think I was going to remember this. But the first is Iona. When Iona comes into play, it's a flying 7/7 angel, and it has you choose as it comes into play. You choose a color. Your opponent can't cast spells of the chosen color. For quite a few, like it can be kind of intensive for new players because you need to know what your opponent's up to. But for a lot of decks, you can choose whatever color their removal is in, and then now Iona just gets to hang out and bash face for the rest of the game. It's a 7/7, so it's a pretty fast clock. There are some decks like Blue Red Storm, Merfolk. There's a pretty good amount of decks where you can just lock them out of the game at that point. So then your other option is Elesh Norn, which Grand Cenobite, she's a 4/7. And when she comes into play, all of your other creatures get +2/+2, and all of your opponent's creatures get -2/-2. Decks like Infect, Zoo, Affinity, Elves. There's a lot of decks that just wipes them and shuts them out of the game. Delver, it does a number on as well. Even for decks that doesn't lock out of the game, it makes things a lot harder for them. I mean, that's a big 4/7 creature in their way now, and all their dudes are pumped down. So either of these two present a pretty big problem to your opponent. So between your control suite and these cards, you beat them down pretty quick. You're also running things like Thoughtseize to disrupt their plan. I mean, it's an Esper control deck, so you have a lot of good control tools there, too. There's a lot of players who don't know the combo very well, especially newer modern players. I know in my time piloting it, I had quite a few people who would read gifts a few times, and usually that meant a free win. I know I played against Blue Red Storm and shut him out with Iona, and he played maybe two or three turns before he realized, oh, yeah, that's right, I just can't do anything anymore. So, you know, mostly blue is all cantrips and all their actions in red, so you say red, and all of a sudden they can draw cards for days, but they're not going to do anything with them. So It's a good control deck. The one downside to it is that the creatures that you choose don't always give you a lockout. And in Modern, with so many turn four combos like Splinter Twin, a lot of times you'd rather just win with Twin than to try to sort of lock them out, sort of shut them down. But it's a blast to play. It's a fun control deck. I like it a lot. And there's a lot of options you can go with where you can run Lilies or you can run Sun Titan combo, you can run Pack Rats. I mean, there's tons of options, so that's the nice thing. You can slot things in and out of your toolbox slot as you see fit. Esper gives you lots of great sideboard cards, so it's one of the better control decks, definitely. It's one that I probably will return to in the future for a little while. All right, so last but not least, that brings us to the aforementioned Blue Red Storm.
Yes, Blue Red Storm is a deck that runs a bunch of the red rituals that exist in the format. As you'll notice from the ban list, two of them have already been banned out, those being Seething Song and Rite of Flame, so don't use those. You'll use Desperate Rituals and Pyretic Rituals to generate an amass of red mana to then play Past in Flames to give all those spells flashback to do it all again, to include all your blue cantrips, and you will hit eventually either a Grape Shot, which is a 2-mana storm spell that says deals 1 damage to target creature or player. So you want to cast 20 spells, this will kill your opponent. Or you grab Empty the Warrens, 4-mana sorcery with storm that says put 2 1/1 goblins onto the battlefield.
So let's explain the storm mechanic real quick for people who aren't familiar.
Storm is a mechanic that says when this spell is cast, you may put a copies of it onto the stack equal to the number of spells you cast this turn.
So that's a key point for Blue Red Storm, because you're looking to do all of this in one turn.
Yes.
You go off, essentially.
Blue Red Storm also has the, in this format right now, it needs the two permanents to make it go off, being Pyromancer's Ascension, which is a 2-mana enchantment. Whenever you cast a spell from your hand that has a copy of that spell in the graveyard, you put a quest counter on it. When it has two quest counters on it, whenever you cast a spell, you may copy that spell.
Yep, so it turns all your cantrips and your Manamorphose, things like that, into huge spells.
And you start generating, you start actually generating mana off your Manamorphoses. You get to play with your colors. You make it to where it's impossible to stop you.
Yeah.
And there are, Storm isn't just limited to the blue-red deck. There is the Jeskai Ascendancy version where you play Jeskai Ascendancy, mana creatures, loot through your deck, getting to untap your creatures over and over again, cast Grapeshot. You can also be in the Pure Steel Paladin version, where you play 2-2 for 2, and whenever you play an equipment spell, you draw a card. Well, all the equipment in the deck costs 0, so you're going to draw through your entire deck, cast Grapeshot. So there's different ways to go about it.
Yeah, the classic is definitely the Grapeshot. Usually Empty the Warrens comes in from the sideboard, but a lot of us run it in the main, and there's nothing wrong with that either. It's a fun deck. It's a very solitaire deck. I mean, you can get the upside to it is if you don't have a lot of modern events in your area, you can play with this deck, just run through it solitaire style and really get a feel for when you can go off, how you can go off, things like that. I think the most interesting thing about Blue Red Storm is that it is a deck that when you attempt to go off, like you can do it on turns, like say your opponent is forcing the win next turn. They've got something beating you down, they're going to win next turn, it's only your turn 3, you can just go for it. Sometimes it only takes a few cards in your hand. If you draw the right things, you can keep that chain going and go off. It's not a definitive, like, okay, I have these cards in my hand, I know I can go off. It's more of a feeling. There are some cards in your hand that you're like, all right, I'm pretty sure I'm going to get there. I can see that I'm going to turn on, you know, my Pyromancer's Ascension, or I have a Goblin Electromancer out. He makes all your instants and sorceries cost 1 less. So there are some key signs that you're going to be able to go off, but there's been times, like I piloted it for a short period when I first got into Modern, and there are times where it doesn't look like you're going to be able to go off, and it works.
The upside of all Storm decks is you don't have to go all in. If you know you can't go all in, but you need to do something, cast a bunch of spells, you know, Grapeshot away their battlefield,
yeah.
And then you go in next turn with a with Past in Flames, and you get to do it all again.
Yeah. So you can go partial. You can even Grapeshot them if you can't quite amass the right amount. Pop off the Grapeshot for 14, 15 and see if you can get there. You know what I mean?
The deck does run Lightning Bolt. It can do that.
Yeah, so it's a pretty good combo deck. I mean, the Bannings of Seething Song really hurt it. It was definitely a Tier 1 deck before that. Now it's not nearly as popular. I would call it a Tier 2 deck for sure. I mean, it comes in and out. I've run into it from time to time, but you don't see it that often. But that's sort of the fun thing in Modern is when you don't see a deck very often, sometimes it shows up at a tournament in Rex phase because they've taken out the sideboard cards for it. They haven't played against it. You may have new players that come in and have just never even seen the deck. So it's got its moments. It's more of a budget deck. It has some expensive pieces, but the expensive pieces that it has, like, are mostly the Scalding Tarns and Steam Vents that are going to be good for twin lists, for all kinds of other lists.
Yeah, the rest of the deck will be cards $6 and under.
Yeah, exactly. So you can get into it pretty safely knowing you're not throwing money away. You can convert the other pieces to other stuff. But all right, that is our huge list that we've gotten through. If you've made it through all of this, you are killing it right now. I know this is pretty lengthy, but we really didn't know any other way to run through all these decks. If you have any other questions on these decks, feel free to email us. If you're having trouble finding lists, or if you want to help finding like the mostly stock version, you don't want something someone's tinkered with, let us know. We can hunt that down for you. I mean, there's a lot of decks in Modern. It's definitely, you got to dig through and find the one that's a good fit for you. So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about how to get into Modern financially. So, with that, we'll be right back. All right, welcome back, everybody, to the final segment of this Modern Megacast. If you are still with us, props to you. Hopefully people are breaking this up and listening in a few sessions because I know it's getting pretty dense pretty quick. So we're going to talk about finances here in a minute. But first, we just want to talk about the first step, sort of, how you start to get into Modern, what you do. So we've talked about it before, we always push this, but proxies, man, you cannot go wrong with proxies. So the best bet is gather a friend, preferably 4, a group of you that all are interested in it, print a bunch of proxies out, throw some decks together, and just go to it. I mean, I think with the list we ran through earlier, you should have a pretty good idea of what's available to you. You can check out some top eights on Star City Games' site and mtgtop8.com to get a feel for what's performing well, what's popping up, and just check out some of those decks. Try them out. But once you're ready to move past that, I mean, one, once you've settled into a deck, nothing beats repetition. You want to play it against every deck you possibly can to get a feel for how they're going to try to disrupt your plan, how you can further like disrupt theirs and still be on your game plan. I mean, you just got to jam games. You're going to find out a bunch of interactions. I guarantee that you can play a deck for 2 months and you'll still see something new come up that you didn't know before. The other thing is, like, look for tournaments locally that allow proxies. These are usually, they have to be unsanctioned. They can't be like FNMs or things like that. But most shops have a weeknight, like a Monday or a Wednesday or something, where you can go and play Modern. Usually they allow like 6 to 10 proxies. Now, if you look at a lot of these lists, if you take out the 10 most expensive cards, they're not that expensive. I mean, usually the money is held up in a few. Now, like Merfolk's a little bit different because it's a lot of like $10, $15 cards. But like, I mean, there's, you'll see. You can go through the list and see that there's some that the price is really just a few. I think Burn is fair to say. Your mana base is probably the most expensive part. And there's a bunch of them that are like that. So check out these tournaments. Don't be scared to lose. Don't be scared to put yourself out there and just try it out. Don't be scared to admit to opponents that you're new to Modern. Most people who play Modern love the format, and they're more than willing to help new players get into it. So reach out, get out there, and jam some games. So now, with that out of the way, with everything else out of the way, let's talk about what I would say is probably most players' biggest concern is the cost of Modern. Modern has become more and more expensive each year. Is that fair to say?
Yes. As it used to be, Jund a couple of years ago was only about $1,000, and now it's up to $2,100.
Yeah, so all of the decks have seen substantial increases. This is because Modern is becoming much more prevalent. You're seeing a lot more opens. Now they've just announced for Invitationals that Legacy isn't going to be included. It's going to be strictly Standard and Modern. Modern is slowly replacing Legacy as the tougher format, the longer, the older format. Legacy is starting to lose out, and in its place, Modern is on the rise. So it's a great time to get into it. Standard decks are also back to being very expensive beasts for a lot of them. So I know a lot of players are looking at just saying, I'll just build a Modern deck instead. So it's a good time to get into Modern. But the prices are tricky. So there's tricks that you can do. My favorite is, if you find a list that you do, like, go ahead and order all the cheap stuff. A lot of lists have a bunch of $1, $2, $3 cards. Go ahead and amass like as much of the list as you can. But there are certain cards that you don't want to pick up right now. I think the biggest one right now is the fetch lands, specifically the Zendikar, original Zendikar, I guess I have to say now, fetch lands. Scalding Tarn, Arid Mesa.
Scalding Tarn, Arid Mesa.
Misty Rainforest.
Misty Rainforest, like you said. Marsh Flats and Verdant Catacombs.
Yeah, so all of those, I mean, Scalding Tarn and Misty are the most expensive. They're both sitting up at around $50, $60, $70 a pop. But it's very likely that we'll see a reprint of those in Oath of the Gatewatchers.
Oath of the Gatewatch, yes. Big reason being is because we will be losing Khan's fetches as this set comes in. It would only make sense to keep fetches in the format, but to switch them up.
Yeah, we have fetchable, the Tango lands or the Battle lands, whatever you want to call them. They're fetchable, so it makes sense to bring in the other five. The other thing to keep in mind is that Wizards has been they've been keeping their eye on Modern prices. They've been doing reprints through the Modern Master sets. They just reprinted the other fetches, so now it only makes sense they're going to continue that trend. So be on the lookout for those. If they're not reprinted in Oath, the price is probably going to go up some more. So watch carefully as you get to Oath. When spoilers start coming out, if those don't appear on the spoiler list, be ready to make some purchases pretty quick because they're probably going to start climbing up. The flip side is, as soon as they're announced on a spoiler list, they're going to start ducking down. You've got kind of a window on those though, because as we've seen with the Onslaught, I mean, they were all less than 20. Some were hovering around 10 when they first were printed, but now a year later, Polluteds are up to 30. Flooded Strands are over 20. I mean,
the only fetch land below $20 is Windswept Teeth at 16.
Yeah. So, and even Windswept was $10 a year ago. So just know that, you know, when those do get printed, don't think that means they're going to be cheap forever. You got Tick and Tock going. You got to get on it. So aside from lands, though, what other cards are there any right now that you don't think are a good buy?
As far as good buys are, that's the problem, is that they're all good buys. When you want to get into a deck, think Archetypial. Be able to, you know, if you can be flexible with said list. Like, once you get your Tarmogoyfs, what deck does Tarmogoyf not go into?
Yeah. Deck's not running green, basically. That's about it. Yeah, so, I mean, focus in on the archetype that you want to play and start picking up pieces for that. MTG Goldfish is a pretty good site that shows the price history of cards. So even someone who's newer to the format can get an idea of what's low right now. Splinter Twins are pretty low right now because they saw a reprint in the most recent Modern Masters. Deceiver Exarchs are always pretty cheap. They're a common or an uncommon.
Dark Confidant is currently at its lowest it has ever been, at $40.
Yeah, but Dark Confidant comes with a big asterisk because he doesn't pop up in a lot of decks anymore. I mean,
it's because of the existence of Tassigar. Now we have the option to get away from him.
Yeah, but, well, also that you may be taking a lot of damage off of your Dark Confidant.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, though, you want to be looking at the decks and get a feel for anything that's at a good price right now, anything that's within your budget, I would order. Because as we get back into Modern Season again towards the beginning of next year, you're going to see these prices increase a bunch. Last year, we saw Snapcasters go from $30 to $80. So, lands, everything is going to start creeping back up around that time. So, now's a pretty good time to buy any of these. We've talked about this before with trading, with things like Puka Trade and deckbox.net or .org. It's one of those, Deckbox. But this is a good way to turn standard cards into modern. And more so than ever, because standard cards are covering, like, they're coming with a pretty big price tag. So if you have one Jace floating around, Vryn's Prodigy, that you have decided you don't want to play, you don't want to buy the others, look at turning them into modern staples. I mean, that's always a safe bet. Also, be on the lookout for, when do we think we're going to get the next Modern Masters? It's not going to be next year, 2017, probably.
Possibly.
Yeah, so we've got a little ways to go from that. Snapcaster was just recently confirmed as the RPTQ card that you get once you win a PPTQ. So if you're looking at playing Snapcasters in decks, go out and grind some PPTQs, man. You get a first place, you get one of those new fancy shiny Snapcasters. Though it is being reprinted, don't expect that to bring the price down. Snaps have gone back down to about $50-$60, and I think that's probably going to be the cheapest they're going to be for a long time. I mean, the fact that he's the RPTQ promo means that we're probably not going to see any other reprint. And reprints in that fashion at the RPTQ level, they're not really going to affect price. It's a different art, so it's going to kind of carry its own independent price tag. It's not going to have a huge effect on the original Snapcasters. So, I mean, look for good deals. If you have people locally that want to trade that are going to give you a good deal on it, nab it up, because that thing's not going down anytime soon. And like I said, it's probably seeing the lowest price right now it's going to see for a while. Tassigars are a pretty good pickup right now. If you're looking at any of the Grixis decks, he should still be like $5-$6.
Tassigar is on the low right now. This is a great time to pick him up once the set cycles out. And in a few years, when they stop printing cards for said set, Tassigar will only increase because he has played in all formats.
Yeah, so he's kind of a long investment right now. But, I mean, if you have some, you know, slightly cheaper standard cards and you get opportunity to trade for Tassigars, I would definitely trade into those. But as far as building a specific deck, I mean, eBay is a great resource for that, especially if you buy a playset of things at a time. I'll usually type in whatever I'm looking for, filter by time ending soonest to get a feel for things that are about to end, and then just place bids on those. I mean, there's a few apps that you can download that are like iSnipe, I think is what it's called, but you essentially can set your price on the app and then it'll bid that price for you when there's only like 3 seconds left in the auction. So it's a good way to grab cheap cards. The thing is like, don't fall into the pit trap of, I really want this, I'm about to lose this bid, so now I'm going to up it more than what I originally planned on. You know, take your time, plan it out. Don't go over prices that you set for yourself. I mean, you can find some really good deals. My other thing is, like, I'm not particular about condition of cards. I generally buy, like, you know, moderately played or slightly played cards, because some of them you get $10, $20 off of going that route. And, I mean, I've had some lightly played cards come in the mail that look completely fine. So it's a pretty safe bet also. I mean, you can get some good deals that way. Any other things? What did you guys do when you were getting into Modern? I mean,
I budgeted myself. I was able to you know, with when I was buying Tarmogoyfs, they were at $100 a piece several years ago, and I budgeted them, you know, two at a time, you know. So as we've said before, don't be afraid to go all in if you can, but if you can't, don't fret. You might not be able to play right away, but that's what proxying is for. Budget yourself, get into it lightly.
Yeah, and touch base with people that you play with and see who you could borrow cards from. Like, if you look at a list and you determine that there are 8 expensive cards in the deck, but someone has 4 of those cards, well, then buy the other 4 first. You know, just prioritizing things like that to where you can still get out to tournaments, you can still grind games with the deck before you own it all the way. I mean, I've been playing Scapeshift for a while now, and I'm just now looking at picking up the last pieces to own the full 75. I mean, don't be afraid to look out for people to borrow from. The more you get into these small weekly proxy tournaments and things like that, the more you can branch out and meet people who have deeper modern collections. Most people that have been playing Modern and Magic all together for a long time have pretty deep collections, and they're pretty generous about lending things out. So, I mean, that's definitely a good way to go. It feels far-fetched to newer players that people would just lend out these expensive cards, but once you build a relationship with them, it's not a big deal at all. Some may require collateral, but it is what it is, man. Just get the cards you need to play some games. But yeah, I mean, reaching out to the community is always a good way to go, because at the end of the day, like we've said, like, you just want to get repetition with this deck. That's what it comes down to. A lot of these decks you can look at, I think, the Top Control, the Lantern Control deck is another good example, where there's like 8 expensive cards and Snaring Bridge and, Glimmer Void and Mox Opal, and the rest is pretty cheap. I mean, yep. So you can pick up all those pieces that way you only have limited proxies. Things like that. I mean, yeah, Burn's another good one. What are some of the more budget decks on this list? Let's see. Affinity is not too bad either, especially if you're proxying the most expensive. Boggles, yeah, it's a great budget build.
Elves is really cheap. I mean,
yeah, Elves just has a few expensive cards in it, and they're cards that show up in a lot of decks, so you're not being too risky by picking those up.
Bloom Titan is somewhere in the mid-range. It's not... not a grand yet, so, but it is on the lower end, and it will only go up.
Yeah, it's on the lower end. It's also, I would say, a tier one deck, as well as Affinity and Burn. Infect, Rob, what's Infect looking like these days?
Infect is a little bit higher in your mid-range price just because it has 12 fetches in it, four of which are Misty Rainforest.
See, but so that's a good deck to keep an eye out, where if we do see this reprint Oath, it's going to significantly lower the price of that deck.
Yep.
So what I would say, though, is if you're pulling these decks together and you see things like fetches in it, buy those last. Try to borrow them if you can for now. Proxy them. Whatever you got to do to avoid, like, shelling out that cash. Now, I mean, obviously, if you have the money, get them. They're not going to drop significantly. And the older versions always carry, you know, a premier price tag on them that's going to be higher than the most recent printing.
The good thing to look at, though, also is look at the time of year we're at. If you go and look up a 5-year history, November, December, early January typically holds the lowest trends for the lowest the cards are going to. And it only makes sense.
Yeah, especially for Modern.
Christmas is coming right around the corner. Modern season has just finished up. So people, they're not putting their money into cards. They're saving it for Christmas.
A lot of them are moving the cards to pay for those things.
And they're moving it so you can find good deals. Because when it came to fetches, whenever I was building Boggles and Elves, I bought my fetches around this time of year. Because you can send, like you talked about eBay, you can send a guy who has 4 of them a competitive buy it now, and you might almost get it for a buy 3, get 1 free price.
Yeah, best offer. Yeah, anyone who has the best offer options are great.
Yeah, you're still talking $120, $140, but you're not looking at $160, $200.
Yeah, and you're usually going to save money if you can save up and buy the play set at a time instead of buying single, you know, one card at a time.
Your expensive cards right now is a good time to look at them if you can afford them.
Yeah.
If not, it just makes your cheap cards cheaper, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, even some of the $5 cards, you can find a playset for $14, $15, so you're essentially getting one for free. So, I mean, everywhere where you can cut costs, definitely do it. Definitely be patient. Don't get too overzealous, because you may find yourself in a spot where you spend a bunch of money on the first half of the deck and then run out of funds for the second half of the deck. So
it's a balance. The big, like you said, talk to your friends. Find out what you can borrow from them. And then just come up with a, no kidding, this is what I have to buy. No one has to let me borrow it. You know, and then you just go from there.
Yeah, and even if your friend has a full 75 of a Modern deck that you're not necessarily wanting to play, try it out just to get into the format. I mean, the $2 to $5 you spend on a small weekly tournament is worth it just to be exposed to decks. And who knows, you may even end up liking the one that you're borrowing. Don't feel like you have to go out and buy a modern deck in one day. Very rarely do players do that. And I would say that it's not even a good idea anyway, because you really need to jam a bunch of games with the deck before you invest the full price into it. The other thing is to look at the cards you're buying, because like Scalding Tarns, they're used in so many decks that they're safe. If Splinter Twin gets banned, it's going to go down a little bit, but it's still going to hold a bunch of value. I don't think Splinter Twin's going to get banned. That's just an example. But there are some decks on the list. Aether Vials, things that run Aether Vials, those are a bit limited to Merfolk. Elves, does Elves run Aether Vial? Nah, so it's pretty much just Merfolk.
Nah, no one's come up with a value Elves list yet.
Yeah, so I mean, there are some cards that are very tight like that. And the problem that you run into those is if you're ready to move them, if the deck's not popular at the time, you may have some problem getting rid of them or getting out of them. So be mindful of that. You'll see a bunch of like Snapcasters and Scalding Tarns might be some of the most played cards in the format. Any of the Grixis land base is gonna hold value pretty well, barring, you know, a reprint. Right now, I would definitely say like Shocklands are a great buy right now. They were reprinted in the Return to Ravnica block. I wish we would have done this sooner, because about a month ago they were probably at their lowest of all time, but they're still pretty low. Most of them are around $12, which as a comparison, during Modern season last year, Steam vents were about $20. So that's almost half price. So that's a pretty safe bet. I mean, now is a good time to look at colors you'd be interested in playing and picking up the Shocklands you would need for those. I know that I'm filling out some of my Shocklands right now for ones just to try to have a complete set. So keep an eye on those. They're an easy thing to trade into standard pieces into them, because a lot of people still have them in their binders from when they were in standard. And that's going to get rarer and rarer every single year. So you're going to see less and less of that opportunity. The fetch lands that are currently in standard, like we said, I mean, they were cheaper a year ago, but still now's the best time to get on them. They just got reprinted, so it's going to be a long time before those things see another reprint. So get out there and try to trade for them. They're in standard, so it should be easier to trade standard cards for them. I mean, just try to pick them up. And you know what? If nothing else, if you win like an FNM or something and you're getting prize packs, maybe pick up cons packs. Try to crack some fetch lands. I know that Battle for Zendikar has the expeditions in it, but that's a much, much smaller likelihood. Whereas cons, if you win a few events and pick up cons for the next few weeks, you're pretty likely to crack quite a few fetch lands. The other thing, this is kind of off the wall, but I don't know if you guys even know this, Chris and Rob may, but every year around this time, usually November, December, Walgreens usually runs a buy one pack, get one free deal. It can be kind of hard to find these packs, but considering they're all going to have cons in stock right now and some Battle for Zendikar, like, that is a great time to use that.
It's usually like the post that Friday post Thanksgiving sale, buy one, get one free.
Yeah,
Friday. And I know what we're over at your house last Thanksgiving, and I stopped at the Walgreens on the way home, and it was empty shelves.
They get ransacked, yeah. So when it pops up, maybe we'll post something on Facebook if we see it. But it usually pops up and goes pretty quick. Some stores will give rain checks for them, so you can get rain checks to come back and get them once they're back stocked. But typically, they have the most packs of the set that came out a year ago, which right now would be cons, which has fetch lands in it. So What a good time to do it. I know last year cons had just come out when they were running it, so I was able to get I got 6 or 7 packs, which was still a pretty good deal, and I got quite a few, 2 or 3 fetch lands out of that. So be on the lookout for that. I mean, any deal you can get is a good deal. Any other last thoughts on this? I think we're winding up here.
Just don't be afraid. Just go out and play. That's really the biggest thing to drive home, right?
Just get out there and play some Magic. Yeah, repeat some games, get into it. We've had quite a few people message us through our Facebook. That's probably the fastest way to get a hold of us. Feel free. I mean, usually it's going to take till afternoon times, Eastern Standard Time, when we're back, you know, from our jobs and everything. But we will all be very happy to have some chats with you about what you're looking into if you want questions on certain prices. I know I wrote a big, long paragraph to someone, you know, not too long ago about buying into a certain deck, so hit us up. Let us know what you got questions for. But all right, that will wrap it up for this week. We are all yawning. We are all tired. Man. Thanks for joining us on this journey. And man, we apologize so much for the past 2 weeks being gone. It's been hurting us to not record. So we are back. Everything looks good. Hopefully this recording edits fine. We're using a new program, so let's see how this goes. But feels good to be back. But all right, guys, we are out of here. As always, check out our Facebook page. Check out our website at www.thesnapcast.com. Leave us some feedback. We live for feedback. And we will talk to you next week.
Oh, shit.